But anyway, here we are, and we've got the opportunity to look at this passage and continue the idea of the apprenticeship to the master. That is what it is to be a disciple of Jesus. And as we do that, I've got these sort of idea that I've been sharing with you over the last few weeks about what an apprentice is. And as we come to the passage this morning, we're going to have the opportunity to see a number of these things sort of are a part of what's happening for the disciples with Jesus as the one that they are following, as the master and as his apprentices. And in particular, the way I started church, I mentioned that we've just, you know, the beginning of this passage is they come down from the mountain. What's the context of that? They've been up having the Sermon on the Mount. It's been classroom time for Jesus and the disciples. They're coming down now for their field trip, where they're going to go into real life with real people and real events and real situations, and they're going to watch Jesus and they're going to observe how he copes with these realities. So as we think about that, I want to do it in the context of some of the teaching that Jesus gave them, which we looked at last week. And Matthew 7, 7 to 8, for example, says, "Ask, it will be given to you. Seek, you'll find. Knock, it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and the one who seeks finds. And the one who knocks, it will be opened." Jesus is going to actually, this is the teaching element from the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus is about to show how that is going to play out. And so just bear that in mind in the context as we continue forward. And so what I've done is I've taken some little bits out as we're thinking about asking and seeking and knocking, just some of the interactions that go on between Jesus and others and what it is that people ask, seek and knock about, and how it is that Jesus answers and provides and opens for them. As they ask, seek, and knock. So the first one is, there's this guy, he's unclean, he has a disease, and he comes to Jesus, and he says, "Lord, if you're willing, you can make me clean." And so just for a moment, pause, hesitate, story, 2,000 years ago, yes, this guy is long gone, we don't know his name, but just for a moment, for him, this is somebody who is unclean. Notice that the language being used is not, "you can heal me, you can get rid of my disease," but it's a question of cleanliness. In other words, acceptability to other people, of God's people. Acceptability at the temple. There was a sense of acceptability to God. And so there's something behind this question, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." There's a person behind this question. Do you know what I mean? There's a situation. There's a circumstance. There is pain. There is loss. And so they come to Jesus and they ask, "Lord, if you're willing, you can make me clean." And so Jesus, like, there's this moment. All the disciples, they've just had the ask, seek, knock thing. Oh, this guy's asking, seeking and knocking. "Jesus, what are you going to do?" And Jesus goes, "I'm willing. Be clean." And then Jesus highlights the fact that this is more than just a disease when he says, "See that you don't tell anyone, but go show yourself to the priest, offer the gift Moses commanded as a testimony to them." There's a whole religious construct around this, that being unclean connected to, or for him, disconnected him from. But this person comes to Jesus. He asks, he seeks, he knocks. Because he's unclean. And so just for a moment this morning, I want you to maybe take a deep breath, and if you want to close your eyes, you can close your eyes, but just for a moment, sit with that reality for you for a second. Do you feel unclean? Now for a moment, as you sit there and think that, you might think, "Well, I had a shower this morning," but just for a moment, if it changes, the word helps. I feel I have a sense of shame around who I am and what I've done, or what I've failed to do. To be able to sit in that moment. I guess what I'm asking is, if the reality is that deep down inside you do feel unclean, I'm asking you to pause for a moment and actually connect with that reality. This person has come to Jesus very connected to that reality for them. "I'm unclean. You can make me clean." I think as human beings, we disconnect ourselves so easily to things like that, especially when we're in an environment with other people and it's like, well, the last thing I want is anybody in the room to know that I'm unclean, so I'm just going to put on the clean face. Just for a moment, it's helpful to sit. If there's a deeper reality, and maybe there's not for you this morning, in which case, praise God. And so there's, from there, we move into another conversation, don't we? There's this centurion, and he is... He's a manager of people, a leader in the Roman army, and so he's used to telling people to do things and having them do stuff. And so he comes to Jesus, and this is in, where are we up to? Verse 6, from verse 6. He says, "Lord, my servant lies at home, paralyzed, suffering terribly." So once again, just for a moment, this is a person who lived 2,000 years ago. We don't know their name. They're long gone, yet this is a situation that involved a real person with a real person that they were concerned about. There was actually a servant that was suffering and lying at home paralyzed. And this centurion clearly has a love, as was often the case in a household with regards to your servants. Often you knew them from when they were born sometimes. So for this centurion, there's somebody dear to him at home who is in great pain. That's what's behind this as the centurion asks, seeks, and knocks. The disciples, again, are going, hey, we got told in the classroom, ask, seek, knock, and, you know, things will be given and answered and opened. And it's happening again. Jesus, last time, yep, he gave the person what they wanted. What's he going to do this time? And so Jesus, depending on your version of the NIV, that is the NIV, but even within the NIV, they changed it from a question to a statement, but the one I've got had a question, shall I come and heal him? Jesus asks in response. He's asked, he's sought, he's knocked. But this centurion has a faith, according to Jesus, that is so great that the centurion knows that the power of Jesus goes beyond where Jesus immediately is. And so he says, Lord, I don't deserve you to have come under my roof. Notice again, there's a sense of uncleanness, uncleanliness, or shame, or unworthiness in this person who has asked and sought and knocked. He says, I don't deserve to have you come under my roof, but just say the word, and my servant will be healed. How does Jesus respond? Jesus responds with, go, let it be done just as you believed it would. Just as you believed it would, the answer is given. He comes, he asks, he seeks, he knocks. This time there is a sense of uncleanness, but this time there is a sense of desperation because of somebody else. There is the possibility of significant loss and grief. And so this centurion comes to Jesus. I want you for a moment, and if it helps to take a deep breath and close your eyes, then feel free to do that. But to just, for a moment, place yourself in the shoes of the centurion. And is there something in your life that you have a deep concern about? And it could be a family member. It could be a work situation. And in the midst of that, you might, in bringing that to God, have, like the centurion, a sense of, don't trouble yourself, Jesus. You don't need to come into my house. I'm not worthy of that. We've had two things that people have asked, sought, and knocked about. And they've come to Jesus and they've asked, and both times the answer has been yes. And we get this little quote, don't we, in the passage. He took up our infirmities and bore our diseases. This is who he is. Jesus tells them on the Sermon on the Mount, he says to his disciples, his apprentices, this is the way it's going to be. And he goes and he shows it, and it's because of who he is. What did Jesus tell them on the Sermon on the Mount? He said, ask, seek, and knock, because if you, as sinful as you are able to give your kids good things when they ask for them, you're dealing with a Father in heaven who is so much better than that. Now, the picture there, just to explain, that was what came up when I searched for free of infirmities and diseases. You don't have to do that. You don't have to be able to do that. But maybe one day we'll all be able to do it together. But anyway, I hope you can see what's happening here as Jesus walks from the classroom into the actual real life situations. And after that, there's this ask, seeking, and knocking of two people. But then there's two people, depending how we read the passage. Maybe it's the one person and there's two parts of the conversation. Maybe it's the one person. We don't know anything about what happens after the conversation. We don't know if it has a good result or a poor result. But there is somebody who comes up to Jesus, but they don't have an ask, seek, or knock. They don't come to Jesus with an ask, seek, or knock. They come to Jesus with something radically different to her. They come with a declaration. And here's the declaration. Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go. Now, if I had to lay bets as to who that was who was already a disciple, I would say that was Peter. Of course, poor old Peter. But I assume it's not Peter. I assume it's somebody else who's come up to him. And so there's this declaration. Hey, Jesus, I'm your man. I am the one. There is no ask, seek, or knock. Notice the completely different. There is also, there's no, I am unworthy. There is no, I am unclean. There is, hey, I am the person that you need following you now. In fact, I reckon there's almost a sense of, Jesus, don't worry, I'm here. And Jesus' response is, foxes have dens, birds have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. Which is an interesting switch by Jesus just in that moment, because Jesus is the one who is answering all the needs. And then Jesus says, you follow me and you're going to have some needs. But of course, there's something going on behind all that, isn't there? And Jesus is also really saying that your deepest needs are met as you follow me. But you need to know, what is it about being an apprentice? That there may be a period of time of low wages. Jesus is saying, there's going to be hard stuff. It's not all easy, but there are things at a deeper, more profound level that are answered. And that at least in the big picture are sorted out. And so there's this declaration. The next thing, and whether it's a new person who's come up or whether it's the same person, the conversation is sort of continuing, I don't know. But the next person, it's not a declaration, it's actually instead an excuse. Lord, first let me go and bury my father. There's this idea that, I'm going to follow you. Don't worry, Jesus, I'm certainly going to do that, but not now. Which stands differently to what Jesus has talked about in the Sermon on the Mount and continually ask, seek, and not be focused, be hungry. This is not a ask, seek, and knock for what I need because I know I need something. This is instead, when I've sorted out these priorities, then I'll follow up these things because these priorities come before what I really need to ask, seek, and knock about. And so there's a lacking. Can you see? And so this is great for the disciples, isn't it? They follow Jesus. Jesus talked about asking, seeking, knocking. They've seen that in the actual, like on the field experiment, the field trip. Now they get to see what it looks like for somebody who doesn't. Now we don't know what happens to this person or these two people. We don't know if there's a good ending to that and there's a like, yeah, Jesus, you're right. Or whether there is a going away sad, which happens, we're told explicitly at other times with people who've come to Jesus. But there is a concern for looking right, perhaps. There is a concern for distractions or other things. And yet there is a simplicity that there is missed out on, which is a simplicity that we see in the centurion and the unclean man, and a simplicity in the way that Jesus responds to all of this. It's plain and simple. It's no fuss. And yet it's not of this world at the same time. That's possibly part of the reason why it seems so foreign to the world is because it's plain, simple, and no fuss. Jesus' ability to deal with our infirmities and our diseases, his ability to reach into the mess, to bring joy and peace and comfort and healing where it's needed, is not of this world. Now, we're going to look at verses 23 to 27, which was not in the Bible reading, so please consider the rest of this as bonus content for you. I thought I'd package it that way. You're excited now, aren't you? Any true Presbyterian. What? Bonus? No cost? No cost. Bonus. Bonus content, okay? We then go into the story. Do you remember the story of Jesus? He gets into the boat. They're going to go to the other side of the lake. And it's all nice and calm, but as they go out a little while, there's this big storm that comes up. But Jesus, he's tuckered out. Why is he tuckered out? Because he's been answering and opening and providing all day. And so he's a bit worn out. He also had a massive lecture up on the mountain beforehand. And so he finds a place in the boat that is comfortable, and he lies down, or maybe it's not so comfortable, he's just so tired, he just falls asleep. Do you remember that? And then there's a storm that sort of hits the boat. And the disciples, note, these are the disciples who've been in the classroom with Jesus. They've been told to ask, seek, and knock. They've now been out in the playground with Jesus, watching people ask, seek, and knock, and also not, and seeing Jesus respond positively to people. And so what happens is they come to Jesus. They say, Lord, save us. We're going to drown. Jesus says, you have little faith. Why are you so afraid? And then the text tells us that Jesus speaks a word and the waves settle down, the wind stops, and there is this calm. And after everything that's happened, even after everything that's happened, this sort of hits the disciples at a new level. What kind of man is this? Even the winds and the waves obey him. And so what Jesus has been doing all day is teaching the disciples of himself, there is a Father in heaven who is good. Always come to him. Always come to me. Because in that you will find the peace and the stillness. Now the interesting thing is there may still be storms going on in life, but if you want to find a peace and a stillness in that storm, come to me. Come to the Father. And it's like in this event, suddenly for the disciples, it goes to another level for them in some way. Who is this guy? As if they hadn't asked that already 5 times that day. Who is this guy? They ask it again now in this situation. Who is this guy? So all through these things, as we look at this passage, and this is another sermon which is like an overarching thing, we probably could have done a sermon just on the healing of the unclean guy if we wanted to or whatever. But we're looking at a bit more of an overview, can't think of the word right now, an overview, and so that we can get a bit of a sweep, I guess, and a bit of an understanding of what's going on for the disciples, as apprentices of Jesus. And across this sweep, we see that in times of judgment and disease, in times of fear or loss, in times of housing insecurity or family pressure or natural disaster, ask, seek, knock. It's true if you want to be a disciple of Jesus. It's true if you want to be somebody who doesn't claim to be a full-on disciple like the disciples were, but somebody who wants to walk with Jesus. It's ask, seek, and knock at every single level. Matthew 6, another place on the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says this, seek first the kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. They're the words Jesus said on the day that they would get into a boat and they would all nearly die. So what's your day like? My guess is that your day, no matter how good it is going or how bad, it has enough trouble already of its own. Doesn't it? Whatever is going on for you. But there is this simplicity and plainness and no fuss thing about following Jesus. If indeed we will bring ourselves to him. And one of the things that's come out in the two people who did bring themselves to Jesus was I'm unworthy to be here. But at the same time, I know you can if you want to. And so that's the truth for us too, isn't it? We don't come with an arrogance. We don't come with hey, Jesus, good news, I'm here. No. It's always the other way around, surely, isn't it? Jesus, it's good news that you're here. And so we're going to come to the table and I'm going to go get my things to eat and drink. If you don't have something to eat and drink and you'd like to join us, I'd encourage you to get it now. It might take you slightly longer, but I'm going to go over here. I'm going to need the last slide in a moment, Cindy. So just as the last couple of people are getting something to eat and drink, I'm going to do something slightly different as we come to the table this morning. And hopefully I can explain it well. Bottom line is it's an invitation, so it's up to you. But also there's a couple of ways that you could do it, and that's up to you as well. And you might choose another way to do it if indeed you want to do something in this moment as we come to the table. But what I have for you are the words from Matthew 26, verse 26 to 29, that Jesus spoke at the Last Supper. And I'd like us to come to the table this morning recognizing that this is the Jesus to whom we can come and ask and seek and knock. And so as I read these words, I'm going to read them a couple of times and I'm going to read them slowly and thoughtfully. You've got the opportunity just to sit with those words. And there's a couple of ways you could do this. One is, instead of looking for, like coming to the table with an ask, seek, and knock, to look at these or listen to these words from the perspective of what has been answered, and what has been found, and what has been opened. That's the resolution for ask, seek, and knock. Do you follow? In these words, as Jesus talks to the disciples, there is a minefield of things that are answered, found, and opened. So it gives us a moment to sit with them and go, ah, that thing that I've had worrying me this week, in these words, I find an answer. Now, maybe in these words, there is not the answer that you seek, in which case, maybe it's worth just sitting in this moment and asking God. And still ask, seek, and knock. That's the two ways to come at it from a, I'm going to ask, seek, knock. The other is an answered, found, or opened perspective. As we just sit with Jesus at the culmination in some ways, like it's, this is just before the cross. The cross is the culmination, I guess, or the resurrection is the culmination. Maybe there was multiple culminations. But this is a pretty pithy moment. Just before Jesus goes to the cross, he outlines what's going on. So let me read it a couple of times, give you some silence, and then I'll invite you to eat and drink. And maybe as you eat and drink, there might be something in particular as you eat and drink that you do that in the context of what has been answered, found, or opened, or what it is that you ask or seek or are knocking for. Feel free to read the words or close your eyes, whatever's helpful for you. Now, as they were eating, Jesus took bread. After blessing it, broke it. He gave it to the disciples and said, "Take. Eat. This is my body. Jesus took a cup. When he had given thanks, he gave it to them. Saying, drink of it, all of you. For this is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. I tell you, I will not drink again of this fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom. Now, as they were eating, Jesus took bread. After blessing it, broke it, gave it to the disciples, Jesus said, take, eat. This is my body. Jesus took a cup. When he had given thanks, he gave it to them. Jesus said, drink of it, all of you. For this is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. I tell you, I will not drink again of this fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom. Heavenly Father, we thank you for Jesus. We thank you for the opportunity to come to your table, recognizing that we are hungry and we are thirsty, recognizing that we can only be filled and fully content in you. We thank you for the sacrifice that has paid the price of our shame and our sin and our uncleanliness. And we thank you that we can ask and seek and knock, knowing that you will give good things, knowing that in you we can find a peace and joy that the world does not offer. We thank you for this time now that we can gather with one another at your table. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, I invite you, if you've got something to eat there, to come to the one who has provided for you, who has set a table for you. And I invite you to take and eat and to remember that Christ has died for you. And be thankful. It seems Jesus had a longing for a day when he would feast and drink the fruit of the vine with you and with me. And so as we wait for that day, I invite you to drink this in remembrance that Christ's blood was shed for you, and be thankful.